Brian Rashog from TSN. Joins us. Shogger, how you doing?
I'm good. Man, I thought James and the panel had to do some talking about gibberish today to kill time, but you guys are right into the gibberish talk.
No, buddy, no. It was a question.
Okay.
Did you know in the leap year, in certain cultures, that's the day of the year that females can propose to men.
Really?
Yes.
So, I did not know that.
So you learn things in our show. It's not gibberish, Rashog, okay? It's intellectual stuff, okay? This segment, gibberish. Everything else, pretty good. So we just got on to it.
I would have assumed that women can propose to men 365 days a year. Well,
yes, they can, but in some cultures, yeah, sure they can. Can's not the right word, but in some cultures, it's more allowed. But in some cultures, you're not allowed. That's just, unfortunately, a fact, right? So we were just wondering, like, would there be a worse question to get the answer no to, then will you marry me?
Well, it depends on what the answer is, right? If it's like no, never, then that's definitely pretty devastating. If it's like, no, it's just not a great time for me right now, then that's maybe a little less devastating. And if it's no for now, but definitely down the road, I mean, it just depends on what the breadth of the answer is.
Do you know anyone?
I don't know.
Do you know anyone who got a no?
No. I don't.
There's got to be somebody. I'm just curious. If they got to know, did they stick around? Let us know. Text in. You can keep behaving. If you want to be anonymous, just let us know. I'm just curious if they stuck around.
Like a relationship show.
Well,
here.
It's just always fun. You know, things that you don't know, you're always curious about, right? It's kind of like behind the scenes. You want to know why Jim Benning pulled away at the last second on the Dan Hamhuis trade to Dallas. I'd like to know why.
Yeah, that seemed odd. See, this is the thing about Hamhuis that I don't understand. Everybody just expects him to re-sign in Vancouver, right?
Well, he basically came out and said he would love to be like Antoine Vermette.
Yeah, and end up back in Vancouver. So I wonder if other teams that were sitting there thinking about acquiring Dan Hamhuis, like a lot of these teams, they acquire these rentals, and they also at the same time gauge their chances of re-signing them in the off season, because they're not always just picking up players that they only want for a few months and then to punt out the door. You will pay more for a rental if you have heard what their contract demand is, if you have a sense that you might be able to sign them, right? Well, now maybe, okay, I'll give up my first round pick, but we may end up having him signed before July 1st anyways, right? But if you're anybody that, like, I don't know that it was smart for Hamhuis to have said that, because now, anybody who's doing a deal for him, you basically know he's just a rental that you'd really have very little chance to sign, or you're working uphill to do that. And I can't help but think that maybe that just kind of beat the prices down a little bit, where it was, and I can't imagine Benning was thrilled with that, because he kind of devalued the trade by doing that. So I don't know what the ask was. I don't know what the offer was. I just don't think Dan Hamhuis did the situation any favors by basically saying, trade for me if you want me, but I'm coming back to Vancouver.
Fair enough. I would agree. Although, even with him saying that, Dallas and Chicago still made calls, and supposedly, I don't know what happened in the Dallas one. I'm curious. People in Vancouver are livid. But, okay, so let's say even the Hamhuis trade. Verbata, Bartowski, like, you move none of your UFAs? That's a strange day.
Yeah, that's weird. Yes, and I haven't heard what Benning had to say today. Like, did he have much of anything to say, or how to explain the fact that they're going to end up letting so many guys go?
No, not yet. I've yet to. Now, I know he had his press conference, but I've yet to see what his response was.
Yeah. Well, I mean, hey, he'd get eaten alive in this city for that. You can't necessarily let good players go. Now, if he retains a bunch of them, fine, but are they going to retain a bunch of those guys? I'm not sure. Seems like an odd day for him. I would definitely agree with that, and especially if he did pull away from a deal, although maybe it was a deal that just was not a good trade. And so it would have looked worse for him to make a bad trade where he didn't get enough in return. I don't know. Maybe it was optics.
Ryan Rashog from TSN. The Edmonton Oilers are fairly busy today with waiver wires, signing contract extensions, paper transactions, and then a late trade involving Patrick Maroon. What do you make of the day?
Well, I thought it was a good day. It's been a productive few days for Peter Chiarelli. He moves Schultz, he moves Purcell. That's the business he had to get done. There were a few other options on the table, and it sounds like he sniffed around a few of them, but no big deals to be made, and that's fine. I don't mind the waiver pickups. He's bringing in two players who are have decent size and are who play with a certain amount of character in their game. So I think that's fine. And then I don't mind the trade for Patrick Maroon. Like Martin Gernat wasn't going anywhere with this organization. The fourth round pick, they picked up some other draft picks here, so I think they're going to be fine. And I don't mind Maroon. I mean, I've watched him play enough that, yeah, I mean, the foot speed isn't great, but he's actually got pretty good hands for a big guy, and he's a difficult player to play against. I mean, he leans on people. So if you listen to what Peter Chiarelli has wanted to do, he said all along he thinks they've become too much of a rush team, and he wants to be able to create more off the cycle. And he's brought in players and Cassie and a Maroon that are guys who are going to do that.
Maroon, they also retain 25% of his salary to Anaheim. So Maroon's a $1.5 million cap hit. What do you make of the people's suggestion foot speed's an issue?
Well, I mean, I've seen Patrick Maroon play live a lot, just over various playoff series. And I've never thought to myself that this guy can't play, he's too slow. And I generally tend to focus on foot speed a lot. I watch for that in players. He's not lightning fast. I don't know that he's molasses slow either. I think he's kind of somewhere in the middle. It's not a strength, but sometimes those bigger guys, they don't look like they're moving very fast. But I mean, we'll have to wait and see. Like, the owners are a fast team up front, and you know, what's he going to look like off the rush if he's playing with some guys who are maybe a little bit faster? I guess that's fair, but I don't recall watching Patrick Maroon and thinking, man, this guy can't play. He's not fast enough. You know, I more remark on how good a set of hands he has for a big guy, and that in Anaheim, they actually did play him with reasonably skilled players now and then, and he was complimentary on that line. In the playoffs, they were able to do it, and he's shown that he can actually make some plays with those guys. So I guess, you know what, we'll know after we see him play live a few more games. But it's never struck me before as being something that means he's not going to be or doesn't have a chance to be a useful player.
For me, I think at times people get over looked on the foot speed. Patrick Maroon doesn't need to fly through the neutral zone with the puck. And, No. Connor McDavid has great speed and Hall or whatever, but how many times do they really wind up and get to use it the full length of the ice? And yeah, they'd be three strides ahead of Maroon. Sure, those plays are going to happen. But in the offensive zone, you know, and when you start on faceoffs and stuff, having a different dimension on your team, here's a guy who can moonlight in your top six when needed. And if anything, if he's a third-line guy, you look at his production compared to the production of the Edmonton Oilers the last few years and their depth guys, and at only $1.5 million, it's a great trade.
Yeah, no, and that's the thing. Like, if you look at what Peter Chiarelli has done here, I mean, he could potentially build a big, heavy third line that, you know, has Maroon on one wing and Zach Cassian on another, and that'll be a difficult line to play against. I mean, Cassian doesn't have any issues foot speed wise; he can get around okay. That line could create some havoc and be a difficult line to play against. It would cycle and grind and that sort of thing. That's what he wants. In an ideal world, would he be a better skater? For sure. I mean, absolutely. But you can't necessarily, I mean, you're not just going to bring in a bunch of perfect players. It doesn't work like that. So sometimes it's okay to have some guys who are a little slower as long as you've got lots of guys that are fast and it doesn't make you a slow team overall. It's okay to have a few of those guys that aren't the perfect player or the perfect skater. And Maroon has a skill set. It's more of what Chiarelli wants. And so I think it makes sense. I've always liked Patrick Maroon as a player and thought there's one of those big, he's not like super physical, but big, you know, at times physical players who can lean on people and can cycle the puck and actually can finish a playoff if he gets a chance.
Yeah, no issues whatsoever for me. Do you see Cracknell being anything more than an 18-game waiver pickup?
Potentially. I mean, I had a chat with Farhan today and asked about Cracknell, and he thinks that they were really hoping he'd slide through and be able to help Utica in a playoff run. He doesn't think they put him on waivers in any way, shape, or form wanting to get rid of him. He said, you know, he believes he's a solid, solid fourth line player. So I don't know his game super well. I'm looking forward to seeing it a little bit, but he's a bigger body. And, you know, I think there have been a few players who kind of make a lot of money in a third and fourth line role who, you know, maybe the Oilers would want to move on from if they can, whether it's at the draft or wherever it is. They want to build a bottom six that is a little tougher to play against and a little less expensive. And Cracknell could be an option to try and continue to do that with. You look at him, you look at Kara. You know, Matt Hendricks makes a little bit more money, but I could see them wanting to build a bottom six that makes less money and is a little bigger.
Well, Shog, I was looking at quickly, Ron Rashog from TSN, as we were doing this interview, I was looking up Benning's answers, and he said basically he had a similar deal to Dallas, and Dallas took the Calgary one. So, well, you know, who knows exactly what his deal was?
Yeah, but I mean, our guys were reporting all day that that Dallas would have been willing to possibly do both guys.
Yeah,
you know that they looked at it. So he pulled the deal off the table last minute. So then they went with Russell. Or did he pull the deal off the table last minute, like after the Russell deal was done? So did they have a deal that would have given them Ham Hughes as well that he then pulled off the table?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, Dregs was saying all day that he thought there was a chance Dallas would try and get both guys done. And so, I don't know. That seems a little bit fuzzy.
Looking at the Chris Russell trade, what do you make of Chris Russell, man? It's amazing the varying opinions on the type of player Russell is and what he does well or what he doesn't do well.
Well, listening to some of the media in and around Calgary in the build up to the trade deadline, I mean, you know, people were saying he was the best player available in this trade season.
I thought that was
you know
rich.
That he would absolutely get a first round draft pick in return, and that. You know, that he was, yeah, I mean, they're trading him because they don't think he's worth the money he's asking for. I think he's a good defenseman, but I don't think that he's a $5 or $5.5 million defenseman or more. I feel like he's kind of overrated. I mean, he's okay. He's good if you can get him at the right dollar, but I understand why Calgary's moving on here. And I think that, I mean, look, Jim Neal he's a good GM. He makes good trades for the most part, but he paid a lot for this player, for sure he did. And I've never been, like, to me, Russell's he's good, but he's not as good as I think the people in and around Calgary want him to be.
Quickly, any team stand out and have a winning day in your books?
Stand out and have a winning day. Yeah, I mean, it's tough to say. Like, even as much as they did give up a lot for Russell, Dallas got what they needed, right? So, I mean, that's an okay day for them. You know, not really. I don't really see any huge winners. What do you think?
I think Anaheim getting Perry and McGinn for basically nothing. Now, I know they obviously ended up giving Patrick Maroon away, but there is a team that just, you know, needed a little bit more depth on their roster. Like, they've got – I was looking at their roster, man. They still got, like, 14 NHL players, and Sean Horkoff is still suspended. He'll come back for them and can win faceoffs, can kill penalties, can even help on the power play. He led Dallas in playoff scoring last year with 6 points in six games. He's still got something left. So, the Ducks for a team that you know, their windows every year gets a little bit smaller because of the age of their top-end guys. They had to do something. I like their day.
Yeah, well, they tweaked themselves up front. They weren't willing to make the bigger deal with the defensemen. And so they tweaked themselves up front. I mean, Peary is an interesting one, and we heard that maybe the Oilers were involved in that a little bit. I don't know if that would have made a ton of sense, but 22 goals last year and goes for a sixth-round pick this year. I mean, when that return came down, I like I'm sure a lot of people, I was pretty surprised. I thought, I mean, even though he's having a bit of an off year here, I mean, 22 goals last year, sixth-round pick. I mean, why wouldn't you just hang on to the guy, I guess?
Yeah, for Florida, a lot of people thought maybe it was just freeing up to do another move. But, yeah, that one was a little perplexing to me. They obviously, I don't know, they just maybe felt like there was no room for him and didn't want to keep him and lose him for nothing as an RFA.
Would you rather have I mean, yeah, they bring in Purcell, and what do they go over there? You look at what they got for Peary and what they gave up for to get Purcell, and it just, something doesn't add up there. It just seemed odd.
I would agree with you. There had to be something behind the scenes. Although, you know, I think they look at, like, Purcell's a better point producer. He's a better power play player than Brandon Peary, right? So, and keep in mind, they also got, I think Peary maybe was made expendable when they got Hudler from Calgary.
Yeah, no, fair enough. Fair enough. That was an odd one, though. But yeah, I guess Anaheim did add a couple of decent sort of depth type forwards for not a whole lot. And they were that team that everybody was saying, holy smokes, they got to get on the board here, because Chicago just got a lot better and the Ducks weren't good enough last year to get by them. And Chicago's gotten better. So, they needed to do something. Standing pat would have been kind of silly. And they, I mean, I still don't think they're good enough to beat the Blackhawks, but at least they've given themselves a little more depth.
Very true, Schrager. It'll be an interesting final 18 games for the Edmonton Oilers. They've played three games where they've at least been competitive and battled. We'll see if that continues. And you got some new guys. We had Adam Party on the show, who's hungry for an opportunity to try to salvage his NHL career, having only played 14 games. So I'll be curious to see. One final one for you. Lauren Brossoit, we know, is being recalled because they obviously need two goaltenders. Of the other three, which ones do you think get recalled for tomorrow's game? Any of them? Or does Nurse, Osterley, and Jujhar Khaira all stay down?
No, so it's a paper shuffle, yeah. Right? So they basically, what happens is they loan Nurse and Brossoit to the American League and then recall them right away. And because they did that, that gives them the option to send them down for the playoffs. So I would expect Darnell to remain with the NHL team. I would expect Brossoit to remain with the NHL because they need these guys right now. I think they just wanted to protect their ability to go down when the season was over. Now, Brossoit may end up down and playing some games, but that's my understanding. Now, Osterley may end up down, but my understanding was that just basically it's a paper shuffle, that it gives them the option to send them down when the season's over.
Yeah, no, I knew that, but they still have to recall them, and I think there's a chance Osterley and Khaira might not be recalled right away.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, they were flat out assigned today, which is different, right? They were assigned to the minor league team. Osterley and Khaira were, whereas Brossoit and Nurse, I believe it was more of a loan situation, and that's just a paper shuffle. Whereas those other guys, I think, actually had to go.
Schrager, we will chat with you tomorrow, my man.
Okay, sounds good, buddy.